Stop it.
It's an inside joke, Peter. We wouldn't get it.
It's inside Josh's head.
Yeah, it's all inside Josh's head. We wouldn't get it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Bullseye Podcast brought to you by AFI Advisors. This is Josh Shores sitting at this table with Peter Raber and Brian Brummett. I don't know. I can't stop. Can't stop. Won't stop.
You don't do it in real life. You just do it on here.
I just do it here. I don't know. It's like I get nervous and I'm just, it's just a nervous tick. Also,
it's a nervous
I'm wearing my puffy vest, just if anybody wants a mental image.
How many vests do you own?
Several. Yeah. It's a good thing for me because I'm very warm-blooded, so I'm hot all the time. But when it gets cold out, I do need an extra layer, but sometimes I feel like a jacket's too much. I know you don't like my vests. I know you have.
I like to make fun of them, but that's about it.
Did you have some kind of weird traumatic childhood experience?
Were you chased through a graveyard in a vest?
With a guy with a chainsaw?
He's like, I'm warm-blooded in my arms, but the rest of me gets
that's
cold.
That's not how it works.
Josh is starting to experience what we all start to experience. As we get older, we get colder, you know?
I have hot flashes. Very personal. I appreciate you making fun of me, Brian Brummett. Just sit over there and drink your cherry vanilla Coke.
We got it yesterday. Yeah, it was really good.
Yep. I love the vanilla Coke, but I don't want the cherry in the mix with the vanilla.
I thought I'd give it a shot. I haven't had it before. It
needs to be one or the other.
One or the other would probably be better, but I like it.
Can we all at least agree that Coke's better than Pepsi?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is like the one thing we've all agreed on.
I won't, like, if I go to a restaurant and say I'd like a Diet Coke or a Coke Zero or whatever, and they're like, well, we have Pepsi products. I'm like, okay, I'll take a water. Like,
no thanks, I'll just die.
There's certain products that back and forth, you're like, okay, it's not that big of a difference, but Coke and Pepsi is a pretty large difference. And I like how we say Coke for everything. Every type of soda, like, is there going to be Coke there? Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a generational thing, too. Like, when did we stop calling it pop?
I think it's regional. So okay. I know people who still use pop. I know people who say soda, soft drinks. You know, I think it's regional. But definitely in the South, it's just Coke.
Well, from a marketing standpoint, that's how you know that you have completely taken over the market when everyone refers to a common thing as your brand.
I mean, Google does fantastic with that. It's a verb.
Yeah, I Googled it.
Well,
and, you know, they're no longer the giant that they were, but, like, Xerox used to be that. Like, oh, I Xeroxed it, you know, that type thing. And, you know, instead of I copied it or whatever it is. Yeah. Xerox, for a long time, had that. So I think you're right. So
Kleenex,
we need to get AFI as, like, I AFI'd it. You know?
I AFI'd it. He retired successfully with money.
It's so funny that Brian brought up Google. You're the king of Google.
I Google everything.
He really does. We can't have a conversation without Brian picking up his phone and Googling something.
So I'm not someone that hangs out on my phone all the time, but if I do not have my phone with me, I just kind of keep track of the questions I need to ask Google until I see my phone again.
I think having the world's, you know, information at our fingertips and knowing that, oh, I can't remember the name of that or whatever it is. Oh, what actor was in that movie? You know, the fact that I could find out in 2 seconds, it plays into that whole addiction that we have with our phones.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm bad about it to the point that, you know, I've considered just like when I get home, putting my phone in a room away from me so that, you know, I'm not constantly looking for the answer for something.
And I like the discussions that come from two people who don't really know, but they're arguing about it, trying to come up with the right answer. And then you Google it and you're both wrong. But
We clearly have a lot of first world problems.
Oh, yeah. So. I don't think that was in doubt.
We are rolling up on an event that I loathe. I would rather be punched in the face than by Mike Tyson. That's a big punch.
Yeah.
Than have to deal with daylight savings time, which is coming up.
November 6th.
November 6th.
Yep.
We fall back. Welcoming the seasonal depression. Here we come. November through what, like May?
March.
I don't remember when it changes. Why are we still doing this?
Because Ben Franklin told us to do it.
God, Ben Franklin.
Yeah. It made sense, I guess, when we were working the fields. We needed the sun up while we were working, blah, blah, blah.
Does that make sense anymore? Like, to me, a farmer gets up and they start working on their farm as soon as the sun comes up, regardless of what time it is.
Did you Google that?
I did not.
You're clearly not a farmer.
It's just in my mind, the rooster crows and you go to work. Rooster doesn't know you fell back an hour. I don't know.
No, I think, you know, it's one of those things that we're a rip the Band-Aid family. Like, whatever time it's supposed to, I hate with the passion. People are like, well, it's really 8 o'clock. I'm like, it's 7 o'clock. You know, that's the time it is today. I realize it was 8 o'clock at this point in the cycle yesterday, but it's 7 o'clock right now. It's not really eight. So we rip the Band-Aid. Like, if we fall back and, you know, the boys are like, Henry gets up 5 to 6-ish, give or take, depending upon what we got going. Ben and Ian get up around 7:15. I don't care that their clock says it's 6:15 in their head. That first day, we're going to rip the Band-Aid off. We're getting up at the right time, and then it's over and done with. We're not going to do any of the pre-planning strategies of, oh, I'm going to go to bed earlier, I'm going to go to bed later. We're going to rip the Band-Aid off when we get up, and then we're going to put on our big boy and girl pants and move on.
I'm always tired in the morning, so
it just doesn't
matter. It's just
exactly. So why make it worse?
Why make it worse?
It's just an earlier hour for me to be grumpy. Yeah.
It does take me about a week to adjust the clocks in my car. I get the ones in the house done right away. I only drive about 3 minutes to work. It takes me a little bit to even remember that.
You're part of the generation that our clocks change for us. Like, yeah, our phones, yeah, change, our, yeah, watches change, blah, 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 blah. I remember being a big deal. Oh, we've got to reset every clock in our house. Now, that was a pain. And it used to be the type of thing, oh, we've got to go over to grandma's because we have to reset all of her clocks because she didn't know how to set them the first time. So, like, you went through your entire family grouping of clocks. And so it was a big thing.
Am I the only one with trust issues that still gets paranoid that my phone's not going to automatically change time in the middle of the night?
Yeah, you're the only one.
I'm a multi-alarm person. Like, I have backup alarms to my alarms, so I probably just take care of it that way, but I agree with you.
And then I always get confused or concerned because, so it changes in the middle of the night, right? At whatever, right, some whatever time. So I get worried that
if I
set my alarm for 6 a.m., is it actually going to go off at the new adjusted 6 a.m., or is it going to go off at said 6 a.m., right? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
No, it used to be a problem, like with Apple iOS, when they would update in the middle of the night, like, yeah, you said to update, yeah, but then it would wipe your alarm.
Yes.
And so they had to fix that in the updating feature. So
that terrified me too.
I know exactly what you're talking about. But it's,
and it always updates at night.
Yeah.
And you wake up in the morning and your phone looks completely different. Like, oh my God, what happened? It's like, oh, it updated.
Also, it's 9 o'clock, so, you know, the light's hitting it better. And
you slept in.
But we're making a push to change this, right? Because we've put it, the Senate's passed.
Unanimous.
Right? Unanimous.
Like, when can you, yeah, remember, yeah, a unanimous Senate vote?
So clearly everyone hates this. So, yeah, now I guess, yeah, it's sitting on the House floor.
Yeah, it's got to get through committee. We got to get through midterms. But if the Senate bill is then a version is passed in the House, then it would reconcile and go to the president. And conceivably in November of next year would be the last time, you know, that we have to worry about it. I don't know if we would then fall back again and stay there, or we just wouldn't adjust. I haven't read the bill enough.
They just get rid of the spring one and we just fall back up
an
hour every
light year. In the evening. I hate 5 o'clock going home and it being dark.
Yeah.
I want to be able to play with my boys outside, or a baseball game or whatever it is, and not be dark at night. I'd rather
driving,
it be dark in the morning.
Driving to work in the dark and driving home from work in the dark is just awful.
Yeah.
That's usually where it ends up with me. And then
move
we hit
closer.
Yeah.
But it's like we've got fun things to look forward to. You know, you got Thanksgiving, you've got Christmas, you've got New Year's, and those are all great. And it kind of keeps the morale up, even though it's dark all the time. But man, once January 1 hits, like January through April, so depressing.
Well, seasonal depression is a real thing. I mean, it's a documented thing. And that's why a lot of people have those. Lights. There's light therapy that you need, that extra light that you're not getting.
They're like sun lamps.
There's just nothing good or exciting going on January, February, March. At least
you're prepping for tax season.
Yeah.
It's our busy time.
That's even more depressing.
Josh was not ready to handle us the first tax season he went through.
It's a little hectic. It's change.
Like, why are you guys so grumpy?
He thought Robert just left. No, he was barricaded in his office.
I didn't even know that Robert was still working here for like a month. I didn't see him. And the door was always shut. And I was like, is he in there? Well, his car's out there. Surely he's in there.
Well, you'd have to climb over the mountain of paperwork between the door and his desk to get there. But yeah, he's in there.
Well, we all agreed. Time change. Boo.
So both the Senate fully agreed on it and we fully agreed on it. That's two things that never happen.
Yeah.
So it must be.
It must be.
In other news, if anyone's still concerned about baseball, the World Series is about to start.
Starts tomorrow. I'm excited about baseball, you know, but I'm the baseball guy. I'm really torn this World Series. None of my teams made it, so I don't have a fighting interest in this. So we've got the Astros versus the Phillies. It's going to cost you about $1,500 a ticket in Houston and about $3,000 in Philadelphia.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough one. But what you're seeing in all the financial headlines is the Phillies and the economy don't have a good track record. And so they've won the World Series three times. 1929, we then went to the Great Depression. 1980, we then had the recession of the early 80s. That was coming out of Carter and oil embargoes and, you know, led into, you know, the beginning, I guess, of Reagan and all that. And then 2008, in the middle of the Great Recession, they won. So people are throwing it up there. It's like, maybe we don't want the Phillies to win. But then again, the Astros cheated the last time they won the World Series, so I don't know if I want them to win. So maybe it can just be called a draw and we can say that nobody won, but... It'll be good baseball.
I'm kind of in the middle, too. I'm a Bryce Harper fan.
Great ball player. Great, great ball player. And has been for a long time.
But also, it's hard to go against Dusty Baker.
Yeah.
I read somewhere he's like the oldest manager now to manage in a World Series. He's like 73,
Might be something like that.
I read a headline about that yesterday, that he's now the oldest baseball manager to... being a World Series, so that's cool. He seems like a nice dude.
Good players coach, good guy.
And I feel like everyone loves him and respects him.
Yeah. And he was not the manager, I think, when they won the World Series the last time. So
no, he wasn't.
You know, he doesn't have that taint on him. Now, the Phillies manager would be, I think, the third ever to win the World Series after taking over midseason. Because I think there was a manager change there. So that one's an interesting storyline. You've got the shortest player in baseball in Jose Altuve for the Astros. I always like the Astros playing the Yankees because then you get to see Aaron Judge standing out at second with Jose Altuve next to him. So it's, I think Aaron Judge is 6'7" and the tallest player in the league, maybe. And then Altuve's 5'6" with cleats.
He's feisty.
Yeah.
Isn't Altuve the one that decked what's-his-face from the Blue Jays?
Maybe.
I think
small dog syndrome. Yeah.
Well, I can't think of his name. They were out there on second base.
Okay.
Dude man slid in, I think, you know, spikes up on him, and he just decked him. I mean, he popped him hard. So
probably didn't go spikes in again.
So small man syndrome must have been flowing that day because he popped him good.
You know, baseball is a weird game of unwritten rules and of you don't do that, or if you do that, I'm going to do this. My favorite baseball quote of all time is Bob Gibson, and his quote was, "The most important pitch in baseball is the second knockdown pitch, so that you know the first one wasn't a mistake." you know, that type of stuff. So I love it. I actually watched last night, because baseball, we're in this little lull before the series starts. ESPN had the 1980 National League Championship, because the Astros and the Phillies used to both be on the same side of this bracket. And it's one of the best series of all time. I think it was a best of five, and four of the five went extra innings. But it was amazing to see the difference between 1980s baseball and today baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, the players look like their arms are pencil thin compared to the muscle-bound guys that we have right now. And then just the graphics and everything else, and the god-awfully ugly uniforms that the Astros had back then. Mm-hmm. Phillies weren't much better, but, I mean, it was interesting to watch, to say the least.
Brian, wake up.
Yeah. Are we getting ready to talk about something?
Brian's still here for anyone who was wondering.
Can talk finance. That's what we're supposed to do.
So I'm going to give you a great segue right here. You ready for this? I'm going to throw it at you, and I need you to take it and run. Because we were going to talk about the financial pros and cons of marriage. So I'm going to let you run with this, because I tried being married once, didn't really work out. So I don't think I need to give any advice or info on this. So I'm going to throw the ball to you, and now I'm going to take a nap.
Well, that's how we started. That's how we came up with this subject anyways. Josh and I were talking about how we divvy up expenses, and Josh just doesn't, because he has them all.
I have them all. I pay
for everything.
All
the stuff that comes along with it.
All the responsibilities, all the expenses.
Yeah.
It's a lot. But I make do.
And, you know, you're not alone, though. About 50% of U.S. adults and about 38% of adults between 25 and 34 are single. And the majority of them are not doing as financially well as, well, Josh, but as their married counterparts, too.
As a superior people who are married. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I told Brian, because it's funny, we literally were talking about this like an hour ago. I'm just going to have to break down and get married again just so I can have the extra income.
Purely financially, it might not be a bad idea.
Well, we were talking about it with the house. Yeah. You know, it costs the same for me to have my house as it does for me to have my house married to Lacey.
I would argue actually even cheaper, because you probably got a better mortgage rate because you have more income potentially.
That would have usually – it wasn't my case specifically, right. But that is a lot of people.
A lot of cases.
And, you know, that goes along with all the other expenses, too. Electricity. Having Lacey doesn't double my electricity.
Right.
It doesn't double my water.
Having kids will.
Lacey triples my water.
Yeah. No, there's definitely pros and cons financially. And as a country, we've incentivized marriage for a long time. And that's kind of been one of the core things of the American dream, and not getting political or anything like that. It's just been one of those things that politicians have put things into the tax code, they put incentives in, and even private companies have done things that make being married more advantageous than not. Now, there's downsides too, and mm-hmm. we can kind of hit both, but you know, some of the big ones are, like on the private side, car insurance. If you're married, your premiums are roughly 4 to 10% cheaper. And there's been studies done, like they're doing it based on the data. Single drivers are twice as likely to have an accident as married drivers. Now, I don't know if it's like, oh, I can't drive recklessly, I've got someone at home that I care about or who would
miss me. Or the type of person who thinks like that is more likely to get married.
Right. That could be it too. There's, you know, if you go into the Freakonomics type methodology of what the real reason is. But they have significant savings there. You have savings sometimes on it used to be a lot more prevalent, but like your healthcare insurance, significantly cheaper a lot of times if you can both be on an employer plan, you know, of one employer versus you having two individuals.
Well, like for instance, you know, with Lacey working, I have the ability to choose her insurance or my insurance.
Right.
Where if she was single or I was single, we would just have the option of the one employer.
Right. So there's a lot of things out there. You know, if you're jointly married, but one person is working and one person isn't, both can still contribute to an IRA.
Yes.
So there's some incentives like that.
Selling your house.
Selling your house is a huge one.
Huge one.
So we've changed the tax law a little bit on this. It used to be like you had to roll your proceeds into a new house. But right now the tax law is if you've lived in your house for two of the last 5 years as your primary residence, if you're single, you get a $250,000 deduction of capital gains. So if you had a $100,000 house, you could sell it all the way up to $350,000, pay no tax. If you're married in that same house, you get $500,000 in deduction. So if you have a house that now, you know, some business really needs that property, like you're across from the casino in Bristol and, you know, they're like, I'll give you $1 million for that house. You're much better off if you own that together and getting that exemption. Tends to be cheaper tax-wise. Once you get two high-income earners, that
marriage penalty
kicks in, so you got to look at married filing jointly.
And that was a bigger deal before the Tax Cut and Job Act.
Yeah.
So it's 2017.
So I don't want someone too successful.
Too successful.
But it also hits the people in that lower bracket harder.
Right.
It's the low and the high bracket that are getting the marriage penalty right now. Mm-hmm. But so most Americans are better off now.
So let me play devil's advocate.
There's a bad side too.
Yeah.
So being single, I have 100% control of my expenses.
Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, that's the thing. It's a control versus options.
So, thinking of it from a give and take standpoint, with that control, I know what's coming in. I definitely know what's going out. So, do you think in the long run it might – I know that the married folks are getting their advantages, their tax cuts, this, that, and the other – but there's also another human being spending money out of the same pot. So I'm just wondering if it all comes out in the wash.
It depends on the couple. I mean, if you marry somebody who's spending a lot, then yeah, it's going to end up costing you more. If you find someone that's similar to you in their financial philosophy and ideals, then you're probably going to be better off with it.
Yeah.
I will say that if you get divorced, so I wouldn't run out there and get married just for all of this, because if you get divorced, you tend to have about 77% of assets relative to a single person of your same age.
Yeah, I could see that. And then obviously there's differences between men versus women and everything else. Yeah. on how successful things go either direction.
We didn't even touch childcare.
Childcare is huge. You know, so there was a stat done by salary.com, I think, and they took all the roles that a stay-at-home parent does, and if you went and outsourced those. So it's not exactly accurate, but if you outsource them all, I think they came up with an annual salary of $178,000 that you're potentially saving by being married and having a stay-at-home parent. But if you've got two working parents, you're still going to have some of those expenses. There's some big differences, but I think, you know, just like with everything, it's individually based.
Right.
You could have somebody, like, I don't spend a lot on me on a consistent basis. But when I see something that I want, which might be in a blue moon, it might be the equivalent of what Kate spends over 4 or 5 months.
Absolutely.
On, you know, those type extra items. So
like a lightsaber.
Right. So when I want a Star Wars lightsaber down at Galaxy's Edge for $250.
I couldn't resist.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
That's five $50 sweaters, you know, that yeah. type thing. So,
well, Lacey gets clothes in yeah. and stuff like this all the time. I bought an Xbox a few months ago.
Right. So I think it depends on spending habits.
Jeez, can't hide money. You know.
That I scrapped and saved for.
So, yeah. I should be paying you enough that you can like not scrapped have to scrap.
Scrapped and saved, Peter.
Scrapped. I feel like I'm being targeted.
And this was an Xbox 360, so this is like two generations ago.
So bad.
I just have to go to thrift stores and buy my clothes because I don't have any money.
And that's what I got with my second job.
Because Peter won't pay us.
I'm always the bad guy. But that's why I tell people, let me be the bad guy. So I guess I get that.
He didn't think we'd take it seriously.
I will say there are other benefits. You know, so just be aware of them. Like Social Security, huge one. Mm-hmm. So if you have one working and one not, you're eligible, even if you haven't worked, for 50% of what your spouse's Social Security would be. And if one of you predeceases the other, which is what happens most of the time, you can move to the greater of the two sums. So, you know, if you were getting $2,000 a month for one spouse and $1,000 for the other, you would go to getting $2,000 for just you. You know, you don't get to keep both, but there are benefits there.
And that opens up options too. Maybe one person can start earlier and the other person can wait a little bit longer. And
you can go through all that planning. A lot of benefits within the retirement system of how you get to keep the IRA longer and things like that. Health-wise, you are 14% more likely to survive a heart attack if you're married.
Because they're there to call the ambulance and stuff?
They're there to call the ambulance. You've got something to live for. You tend to be in the hospital less amount of time after a heart attack. So we don't necessarily know why.
But what's the percentage that the spouse caused you to have the heart attack?
Well, that could be up there.
It's at a younger age, but
no. But I think these are all things, you know, people a lot of times will look at it. Now, I will say that there's scenarios where it's not as good. So if you have two incomes, when you're applying for student loans, you've got more expected burden to take. If you do have two credit scores, so one credit score could bring the other person's, you know, rates down or whatever it is. We're seeing lately, especially end of life, we're starting to see some people divorce but stay together to protect assets because of medical costs. So by separating, you know, if two people are married, their debts are each other's in most cases. There's arrangements where it couldn't be. But if you're not married, you know, it would be like, you know, your prior spouse. Like if they had a debt now, you wouldn't be on the hook for it. So if you're expecting huge amounts of debt, there's ways to transfer your assets into your spouse's name, get divorced amicably, keep living together, and then, you know, you've got to make – there's a bunch – talk to a lawyer on that one. But there's reasonings behind it and ways you have to do it. But that can be a huge thing. So there are financial downsides as well. But – what have we said about everything? Just be aware of them.
I mean, I agree with Josh a whole lot. A lot of the being single thing is the control over it. You're giving up some control when you bring a partner into anything. But having the partner, or the marriage in this case, you have more options through the taxes, through the health care, through Social Security.
Through the intrinsic joy that our spouses bring us.
Yes. Such a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get more money, but you have to put up with somebody.
I was telling Brian about this. There's a really funny video going around, and it's a gentleman who says, basically to the camera, I'm looking for another single straight friend to get married to because I want a dual income household, but I don't want to deal with being married again.
Why do I feel so personally attacked right now?
I mean, but like he goes through it, and it makes a lot of financial sense. It's like, you know, you want to have a girlfriend? Don't care. You want to, you know, you want to mow the yard this week? Don't care. You know, it's like all the things he didn't care about. He was like, we're going to have two incomes and not a lot of expenses. So we'll pay somebody to do it if we don't want to do it, that type of thing.
There you go.
It's like, you know, so it there's definitely pros and cons and ways to go about the system.
At that point, why stop at one person, though? Just start bringing in a bunch of people.
Well, into a collective.
I guess it turns into a cult,
Brian,
at some point.
You're going way down a rabbit hole now. We're not that type of podcast. I don't know what you've been listening to.
That's just Fight Club, isn't it?
Yeah.
You need to stay off the Google.
I think they've made TV shows about that and the legal things that go along with it. They had, Big Love and Sister Wives and all that.
I'm also fairly certain there's some Netflix documentaries that's just right up that alley. get bored. But. Well, those are good things to be aware of, and
good things to know beforehand. Like,
right, yeah, right.
That's why we have marriage counseling things, so that you can talk about some of this stuff before you go down the aisle.
Right, and it's funny how a lot of this stuff coincides, because there's so many, I guess you would call them, life changes, where the financial aspect has such deep roots in what people would not even know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't know until you ask, but there's a lot of times you don't even know to ask.
Right.
So hopefully some of this stuff is beneficial for people to know, and to maybe start asking questions earlier the better, obviously. But I do know, you know, Peter, we had a couple of other things we wanted to make sure we get out there before the end of the episode. And one, you know, the GDP came out today. I know that's something you wanted to address.
Yeah, I just wanted to hit it real quick. We were at 2.6% for the third quarter, which we had negative numbers the first two quarters. So that's a positive sign. Now, there's some intrinsic things on the underside that, you know, we had better than expected exports versus imports and things like that. But growth is good, right? So if you're worried about going into a recession, growth is good. So the market was up like 400 points when we started recording this, wherever it's at now. But one of the underlying things that was in it, I think, is really important. So the Federal Reserve looks at what's called the PCE, personal...
Brian, get your phone.
I'm Googling. I'm on it.
Something expenditures.
He grabbed it before I even said it.
PC, it's personal something expenditures. But
consumption.
Consumption expenditures. And that's their track of inflation. And for the quarter, we were at 4.7%, which the previous quarter we were at 7.3%. Now, we'll get the monthly number, you know, here at the end of the week. But it's an indicator that inflation is abating to a certain extent. So we have growth and inflation, growth up, inflation down. That's why the market's looking at it positively today. Tech sector, not so much, because Facebook butchered their earnings. But it's a positive sign. Now, it may reverse itself in the fourth quarter, because there was some, like I said, some stuff with imports, exports that probably won't happen again. But it's better than bad. So good numbers there. Hopefully, you know, we've started to have a little bit of a rally off of a retest of the bottom in the market. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this can keep contributing to that.
Yeah. And then there was a pause on the student loan forgiveness, right?
Yeah. So I just wanted to make people aware, because they'll see the headlines.
Yeah.
The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals was asked to take a look at President Biden's student loan forgiveness. And what had happened was, I think there were six states who got together and filed a lawsuit saying that student loan forgiveness program would adversely affect that their state student loan programs into this. They were all Republican states, not that that necessarily matters, but they were. A lower court threw it out and said that those states don't have the standing to even bring this case. The Eighth Circuit Court put a pause on being able to issue anything while they're allowing more information to come in. The Eighth Circuit will make a ruling. I think that everything had to be in maybe by yesterday. Mm-hmm. They'll make a ruling. That ruling, whether it allows it or doesn't, will be appealed, and it'll go to the Supreme Court. So this is a process. But the thing that I wanted to make people aware of is, if you think that you're going to be eligible, this pause has not stopped the government from receiving applications.
Yeah, still apply.
Yes.
Still apply.
Right.
And, you know, if it goes through, great. If it doesn't go through, do be aware that those payments start January 1. So if you were thinking your loan was going to be completely forgiven, I'm not going to have to pay in January, save up some now while we can, and be ready for it just in case. And then if it doesn't, then go spend that money on what you were planning on spending. Right. But just because we've paused doesn't mean it's not going through. But I think everybody in the legal profession was pretty attuned to the fact that just because it was announced didn't mean that it would go through without challenge. And we're in that process right now of challenging.
They started challenging it immediately.
Almost immediately, yeah. So we'll see where it goes. It, from what I've read, and I'm not the legal expert, we should probably get Robert in here on this, but it seems like it's probably still going to go through, but you never know.
Right.
It's a more conservative Supreme Court. I think Judge Kavanaugh will be the first one to review it based upon the docket, and then they'll determine whether or not they're going to even hear it. So the Eighth Court could say, nope, we don't agree. The thing is going through, and then the Supreme Court has to agree to hear the case. And they may look at it and say, there's no grounds. We're going to just, it's not worth the argument. They made a good decision or whatever.
Yeah. Well, some good updates there. If you have any questions about any of the things we discussed, side note, we're not marriage counselors, but we're happy to talk through, some of the benefits and pros and cons of that.
And we did stay at a Holiday Inn Express
last night. Yeah, we did stay at a Holiday Inn.
I'm sure we can get some kind of certificate online to be.
Kate and I have been married. Next year it'll be 20 years, but we've known each other longer than we haven't. So,
right.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We have some, at least, ways that work for us.
Yeah.
They may not work for anybody else, but they work for us.
That's what it's all about. That's the customization of it.
Yeah. Well, if you have any questions about any of this, or if you have any questions for the podcast for future episodes, just email us at connect@AFIadvisors.com. And as always, go check us out on all of our social sites. Please share those. Get the word out. Spread the word. I think there's a lot of information here that folks could find useful. Also, AFIadvisors.com. We have a website. It's really cool. There's a lot of pictures of us. Cool tidbits. But we appreciate everyone listening, and we hope to see you next time. Peter, Brian, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure. Let's get back to work and make some money.
There we go.
Have a good day.